whatever you want. Okay, go, let's go. Wow, look at this.
Okay, well, tell everyone, right. So, as I'm saying, it's kind of like it ended up being a bit long, so talk kind of, I guess we'll have to kind of see what people are interested in. So, okay. So, the first one, let's just start with number one, yeah? So, basically, it's kind of like a bit of a funny kind of funny thing that's being said here, really. Came into Shadjul Moshe, Amru Tola Chazinam, Kiyahu Simna, Batlu Gazar Asaihu. So what happened was that when Moshe got thrown into the Nile, right? So basically, the Egyptian sorcerers or whatever, yeah, their simon was that the savior of Klal, Moshe Rabbeinu, was going to get struck by water. And basically, once it's been thrown into the Nile, it says that kind of their simon went away. It's kind of like, wow, tick, you know, box ticked, yeah? Mm-hmm. And therefore, they decided there was not going to be a gezeira anymore, right? So what bringing out here in Rashi, really, in the Eitz Yosef as well is, yeah, it's a bit hard to understand because at the end of the day, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu kind of got saved from the Nile. Yeah. Right, so he didn't really get struck by the Nile, so... They seem to kind of be making a mistake here, right?
Why do you say he got saved from the Nile, though? I mean, because it kind of
lost him.
At the end of the day, he got saved. Lachora, I'm saying. Well, I mean, we'll see. Rashi, brainwashed a bit by Rashi, which is great.
Yeah.
But Lachora, yeah, nothing happened to him, right? He got put in the Nile, right? You know,
he was saved.
He was not like
an aeroplane just like breaks down in the middle of the air and he jumps out and he's flying down, you know, free falling. And the air saved him.
So part of the problem is here, right? That at the end of the day, they had some kind of prophecy, yeah. That the savior of Israel was going to get struck by water and going to get, you know, knocked out by water.
Right.
The Chorot, it didn't. And then they seem to think that this was fulfilled. They seem to see in their thing that, you know, the whole thing tick box. Yeah. But we know that
you're remaining very silent over here.
You feel strong. Were you bothered by this question? Why were the sorcerers of Egypt seemingly so far off? Yeah,
okay,
they had a prophecy that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to get struck, and they seemed to think tick box, he's out. Let's remove the whole gezeira, but you've been completely saved, right?
Okay.
That's the question.
Okay.
I think we're anticipating the answer. So the Eitz Yosef kind of addresses this, and his first attempt is to kind of bring out Rashi, which is kind of what we know that the bottom line is in Hachanami. Yeah, he was kind of in a sense struck by the waters because he was put into, as Ribiel was kind of pointing out, being put into a very kind of dangerous position. Yeah. Is in a sense being kind of struck, and that's kind of what misled them. That's what made them think. So he says here, let's look inside. Rashi Nikasha Bazer, Rashi's bothered by this problem that we talked about, yeah? The Katav calls Manshai Moshe Biyor, Ein Lecha Lakos Mizer, right? That it's kind of, you know, in a sense, right? Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, come in, sorry. That Ubatla Hasimon Shalakia, right? So he was kind of, you know, there was the idea of being struck kind of was fulfilled in a certain way. Yeah, there was, you know, a great danger, and therefore the simon kind of disappeared. Oh yeah, it's been fulfilled. Now he quotes someone else. I don't know who this is. Mar Nach. I don't know who it is. Katav. Right. He writes, and this is an interesting idea. In terms of understanding why the sorcerer is kind of, you know, how it became fulfilled. Yeah. Shlifanim mischalef k'dvar echad b'dvar echad. Acha, yeah. Sometimes things get swapped, yeah. And he gives a marshal, right? Going, okay, hey, governor, I'm reading, I'm Yavamis, right? So there's this instant in Yavamis, right? Isha achas shekalal ledayan. So a woman went and gave this terrible curse to a judge. Amale titba arbe, right? You're gonna, your ship is gonna drown, yeah. You're gonna drown in the water, right? So the siva hacham. So what did this hacham do? So she commanded, yeah. He commanded, right? They should take his clothes and they could have done. Well, his clothes, the hacham, yeah? So, this is a case in Yavamas. A woman gave a dayan a terrible curse, yeah, that he's going to drown in the sea.
Oh.
So this dayan, the hacham, went and he said, please take my clothes, yeah, and dunk them into the sea, yeah? She's kind of a isha, right? Klas Tvias Begadav Biyam, right? That his clothes would indeed kind of drown in the sea, yeah? Yain Sham. So what is he saying? He's saying that sometimes, yeah, that you can see kind of, you know, you're going to be struck by water, and you can have something which is akin to this, and even though it's not fulfilled, yeah, it's a symbolic fulfillment of the kind of, in the case of Yavamis, the Klala, and here in our case, yeah, that they had a simon that he was going to be struck by water. This was kind of a web of a kind of a symbolic fulfillment of that, and that's why that kind of simon went.
Beautiful.
Okay, so that's kind of bringing that rush in the right. Yeah, so in order to understand that. Next part, I think number two, we're going to leave a little bit. Maybe you need to see in your own time. Yeah. How did Moshe Rabbeinu stop the Gezeira? And it's linked to kind of other things we've seen in past weeks about the different stages. But it's a little bit complicated, but I think it's very interesting. So look at the Tosfos and the Marasha kind of in your own time. Yeah. Okay, next point here, right? So again, this is kind of the development of the story, yeah? And basically, it talks about the day that Moshe Rabbeinu was born.
Oh, yeah?
And basically...
No, he's put into the nail.
Sorry?
Put in the nail.
Yeah, but it's two things. It's the day he's born, and then based on the day he's born, right? When he's put into the Nile, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And the importance, the significance of the day he's put in the Nile, right, is that basically it corresponds to certain days. So there's two possibilities given. One possibility was that he was put into the Nile on the seventh day of Pesach, right?
Mm-hmm.
No,
that's the 21st of the month. Correct.
Yeah.
One in the same.
One is Shavuos.
Right. Exactly. And the other one is Shavuos. Yeah. And in both of these occasions, basically, the angels are kind of saying something. They're saying, wait a sec, yeah, right? How could he be struck, the person who in future is going to, you know, split the seas, you know, go into the seas, yeah? How is he going to strike the person who's going to future, going to be given, you know, the giving of the Torah, yeah? So the issue here is, yeah, kind of what does it really mean, yeah? Right? Because if, you know, if he was going to be killed in the Nile the day he was put on Nile on those days, yeah, then he wouldn't have been doing Shira. He wouldn't have been, the whole thing would have been off. So what are the angels trying to say?
Yeah, yeah? Well, and that wasn't the time, right? And that wasn't the time, no. I wasn't sure if that maybe was the time, no, when people brought the question up, you know, right? But seemingly
you,
not.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Meaning they're saying, well, if he's going to be killed, then who's going to do it?
Yeah, well, that's... You hear what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, is maybe they're saying, listen, you know, this is the person who would do it, and there'll be no one to do it, yeah? But seemingly it wasn't quite that. You know, is it really fair that the person who is going to sing Shira in the Arb, or the person who is going to give Torah, should be struck on this day? It's kind of a bit, it seems a bit backwards, because if he's struck, then it's not going to happen, right? If he's killed by the Nile, it's not going to happen.
That's
not clear. Well, I mean, the first thing is kind of reading it a bit on along these lines, yeah, right. So Hakavana, right? So it says the Enyaku brings two kind of answers. The first one is kind of along the lines of Rebbe Lai was going to say, right? Here's the problem is that what does it mean? You know, how can you know that this person be struck, or the person who is going to say it? Well, it's backwards, because if he's going to be struck, then he's not going to say it. So the Kavana de Imyanatzel, right? Milakusu Yomashira Biyom Zeh, right? Al Kain Ruishi Natzel. So the first of the Chenin in Torah. Right, so the first answer is basically what Rabbi Yehuda was saying. Yeah, that's how the Ein Yaakov is understanding it. Yeah, that he's fitting to be saved because so that in future he will.
Yeah.
Right. Does that make sense? That's the first answer, which I think maybe is a simple one. But Odia Shlomar, right? Halakusa Sharou love me some mamash. So the other answer is that what they're trying to say is when they're saying, you know, don't let him be struck, they're not thinking that he's going to die.
Right.
For sure, he's going to survive. That's not the question. He's going to survive. He's going to say Shira of the Yam, or he's going to be there for Matan Torah, right? They're not this striking that they're trying to save him from is not Misa Mamish. Rak Ez Lakusa Va'onesh, right? Kamoba Mei Mariva. And in fact, this is similar to what did they see? They saw he was going to be struck, and the truth was that striking was at Mei Mariva.
Mm-hmm.
Mei Mariva, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't killed. Right. Naomi Rever, there was kind of an onesh, there was a kind of sin he was involved in, whatever, and he was kind of given a certain punishment, yeah, mm-hmm. but he wasn't killed mm-hmm. immediately. Shelo nigzar alav namus miyad, right? Kein hayuru lavo alav bahashlachas amayim. So therefore, when he was thrown into the water, there was some kind of striking, some kind of down, negative thing that was meant to happen to Moshe Rabbeinu, yeah? But it wouldn't have involved him being killed right away. It would have been maybe, I don't know what it would have been, yeah? But he's right. trying to say it would have been some. There would have been some kind of punishment meted out to Moshe Rabbeinu, yeah. Mm-hmm. And on that they were saying, Yimalach Hasharet Tzitzilu. On that they were saying, wait a second, it's not fitting to give him this punishment. Maybe the same punishment as he would have, similar punishment as he would have ended up getting at Meir Meriba. Like, I know he's not going to come into Eretz Yisrael. Some kind of punishment, yeah, that he would have got at the sea, yeah. And that basically the angel saved him from that punishment because Mekoch Sha'atid Lo Mashira B'Yemazah. Really, in that cell, blishum pegara, without any kind of punishment. So
bottom line, this day,
the schus of that day, yeah. So bottom line, again, the question is, how could the angel say, you know, how could you punish, how could you strike someone who's in future going to sing shir at the yom, when if he is struck, he's not going to sing it? That's the question. First answer is, yeah, that's exactly what they meant. Save him so that he can in future be alive to sing Surah. That's the first pshat. Second pshat is the saving is not that is from a punishment, not that he would ever be killed, of course. But there's similar punishment to what he didn't end up getting, some kind of punishment where he would still survive. And they're saying it's not fitting even he should get that on this same day, the schus of the day, where he would, you know, he's in future going to sing Surah mm-hmm. at the yom. So two pshatim, yeah. Nice. Okay. This is an interesting one, by the way. I don't know whether you thought of this question, yeah? So it says, we said there's two dates. This is number four, yeah? Okay. We said there were two dates, right, that corresponded, mm-hmm. yeah? Right? To basically through that 3 month period.
Oh, yeah? Wow, what a question.
And basically, according to one of the opinions, yeah, we had to say, right, that if it was going to be earlier on, yeah, the date, in fact, the Shira Hayam date, yeah? We're going to have to say that there was actually a leap year, right? And then we say, wait a second, but that's still not 3 full months. So we ended up saying, okay, part of the first month, part of the last month, and then a kind of a middle month. Now, if you take a step back and think about it, wait a sec, yeah? So that means, yeah, that when we say that he was put into the yom after 3 months, it really wasn't 3 months, right? Obvious, right. Yeah? Correct. But the main question is, so why did he get put into the yom at that stage, right? We know that he was born 3 months early. Right? So he could have held out a lot longer, right? Why did they need to, why did his mother, right, go and put him into the yom early? Right? So actually this question the Ein Yaakov addresses, yeah? And he says, right, let's have a look at number four. V'ha lo hitzpinu shlosh yirachim shleimim. Right? So they didn't hide him for 3-4 months. Why not? Hatam, right, k'moshe kasuv le'el, k'dei sh'yamad lo z'chus shel yom zeh. So, i.e., an amazing thing comes out of this, yeah, according to his answer. They actually, yeah, they anticipated that the 3 months is going to be over soon, and his mother was prophetically aware that there was some special schus on this day, yeah, wow. And therefore put him in the yam on a day in which it was an auspicious day.
But it's going to come down to the rhythm.
And you'd be saved. Isn't that an amazing pshat?
Yeah. I'm
sure others must say another thing, I guess. I mean, I don't know what you thought about that question. What, did anyone else have another answer?
I asked, like, it's weird, it's not 3 months, but that's what he also said.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I mean, it's an interesting question, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Unless I suppose you say that maybe that was always what the 3 months.
That's what I was thinking.
I was thinking when
he said that, yeah.
When it said that she was already 3 months pregnant,
right.
Maybe it meant this three shorter months. Maybe.
Yeah, sure. But the Ein Yaakov didn't learn like that.
Yeah, the Ein Yaakov didn't. He then was mamish 3 months, yeah, yeah.
and yet,
couldn't hide him any longer, meant in anticipation of the end of 3 months, because therefore looking ahead, oh wow, we're going to run out of time soon. Oh, this is the perfect day. That's kind of how it ends up. Okay, let's jump a bit, yeah? I wanted to do number six, because... Okay. Oh, Hashem, hurry! I was like waiting out for you. So Ari asked this question.
Oh, look at this.
Yeah. I was very excited when I saw this. So this is the Chiddushim Rabbi Yashiv, yeah? So again, about these 3 months, this 3 month period, yeah. So it's kind of like a technical question, but it kind of is like, you know, is great one to pick up on, yeah. Which is that we know there's a whole process that's needed, yeah, for declaring a leap year. Right, you have to have a whole based in, and in fact, you know, there may not even be, if you look at beginning of Sanhedrin, like it's not necessarily a normal based in, and all sorts of conditions, whatever it is, yeah. But the point is, yeah, there was no based in at the time, right? Like, okay,
yeah, so Moshe
Rabbeinu
wasn't old enough,
yeah, Moshe exactly. So, insofar as we're trying to explain why Moshe Rabbeinu was, in fact, there was really 3 months, and that was because it was like a whole leap year. So how did it become a leap year without fulfilling all these conditions, yeah? So that was Ari's question. Yeah, that's your question, right? So Rabbi Yashin kind of, in a very succinctly kind of says, yeah, this is number six. He says, Eini yodea mi ibra. I have no clue, yeah, who made it into a leap year. Ela lefi ha-cheshben ha-isa sarich loma lumuberes, yeah? So all he's trying to say is kind of like what, a bit like kind of one of these Lav Dafka things, yeah, that it kind of would have been a month that would have been Muberes, and therefore I suppose kind of counting according to what the months should have been, right? So it turns out he was kind of, this was kind of 3 months. So like the whole count in the Torah is a kind of a theoretical count in a sense, yeah?
Wow.
According to Torah months that should have been. So I mean, it does, once again, it does end up being it's 3 months. It's just like, had we been at the time, I don't know whether we would recognize what the months were, but the Torah is telling you that in theory that there was 3 months, because in theory that would have been a leap year. It's a bit mind-boggling, right?
Maybe the Kasha Taurus is better now, though.
The what?
The Havamina.
Oh,
and the answer is like...
Yeah, sorry, I are you frozen?
Avraham Avinu served matzahs already in keeping Pesach Avraham Avinu.
Right.
If they were keeping that, they also had to have it for Chodesh Aviv. So someone was doing something there.
Right. So there was something going on. It's hard to understand these things though before Matan Torah. Like, you know, I suppose in some ways they were kind of spiritual things that Avraham Avinu like tapped into. But you're right. I don't know how it, because we used to. For us, yeah, like when we declare months, like the spiritual cycle follows our declaration, right?
Right, yeah, that's also right, yeah.
So this is kind of the tension we're pointing out. There was like, there were times there, those times don't necessarily work without, but somehow they were around even before we declared.
Yeah, that makes it more problematic. Good point.
Yeah. But anyway, it's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Oh, we've got a bit of time, right?
Yeah.
Should we do?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, should we do?
About the horses and donkeys.
About the horses. What about the horses?
Yeah. Just about that.
Right. So again. So now we're kind of jumping ahead a bit in the Gemara, yeah. And we're talking now about the procession to Eretz Yisrael, yeah,
mm-hmm.
with the coffins, yeah. And it says here, number seven says, "Vayispedusham misbeikadol," right, the kaved, yeah, mode, right. That's the pasuk, right, Tana. Afilu susim, afilu chamorim. So, as part of this kind of funeral procession, yeah, mm-hmm. you even had the horses and the donkeys who were involved in crying and the hesped for Yaakov Avinu. So, kind of what is the drasha here? Like, where do we see the horses and the donkeys being involved? Yeah, in this sentence, yeah, and what was kind of the reason? Yeah, so. Now, what I haven't written on here, yeah, which I'll get to in a second, yeah, I'll first explain where he learns out the drasha. There is another pshat, yeah, not to forget, yeah. But let's start reading this. So he says the riach, yeah. He says efshar didayik, right? That maybe the diuk is omo gadol v'kaved mode. So that's what the pasuk says. It was great and it was kind of heavy, yeah. Deloshay kaved v'misbeit. It's a very strange thing to say, like a kind of, you know, the kind of the, what do you call it, eulogy, what, how do you call it?
Yeah, you're right.
The eulogy was kaved, was like heavy.
Yeah, we can't do that actually to the English, but whatever, it's a bit strange, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ella, misbeh gadol, it would have been moan, my boy.
Yeah, yeah,
very good.
It's talking about the attendance, it was a, you know, a huge attendance, there was huge numbers of people, yeah? Why are we kind of saying it was like a, you know, it was a really, like we're talking about a group of people, it was a heavy procession. It's kind of a bit of a funny kind of expression, yeah. So lemeima dezer darshu high kaved, yeah. So therefore, basically, what he's trying to point out is that this lashon of kaved is a bit unusual, right? And that's why there's kind of something unusual going on, and therefore that's why we're kind of darshu.
Must be the
horses. So somehow I guess kaved means when we're talking about heavy, we're talking about heavy animals, yeah? Right? There's something heavy about
gasser.
Right, So why were these animals involved in, you know, eulogizing Yaakov Binabu, right? So he actually says a very interesting fact, but before I say his pashat, the other pashat I saw, which was it you mentioned? I think you might have mentioned, like, alluded to it. I think someone said it.
Right.
Was that Yaakov Avinu was involved in the end of the famine, yeah. Right? So it could be that everyone benefited from that. So everyone kind of appreciated Yaakov Avinu, because when Yaakov Avinu, we know, came down to Egypt, yeah, that basically the famine ended early. Right? So obviously, you know, livestock also kind of, you know, in fact, maybe they benefit more than humans, because, you know, their food gets cut first, really, yeah. That other people explain it that way, but the Riaf actually, he has a different pshat, which is linked to the context we're talking about, because if you remember, the context was, yeah, that actually is kind of interesting, right? It's one of these turnarounds, yeah, that when they went back in, so you know, we know that the Esav and the chieftains end up joining the procession and hanging their crowns, so on and so forth, but it wasn't always like that, yeah, really, yeah. The Esav, actually, they all came out. They were going to go and give Klal Yisrael, you know, the Bnei Yisrael, a bit of a potch, yeah? They were there to wage war on them, yeah? So explains it in that context, explains the Riaf, yeah? The Kan Hesped, right, what was, Hamisped was, because She'esav lohei chilu oso hayo, hasusim, right, b'chamorim, right? That the reason why they were kind of involved in the Hesped was because, in fact, the horses and the donkeys, that these were from, you know, Esav, yeah, they hadn't been fed that day, right? But Ofen Shayu Nokhim, right, Mitzdarim, right, Bosa Yom, because that actually, when you go to war, you want your horses, yeah, to be in a really rotten mood, yeah? Like, you know, like the horses, they're kicking away,
yeah,
they're like,
stumble,
you know, they're like in a that's how they went to war, yeah? So, Ki'ilu Heimaspidim. So, in fact, they were in a rotten, they were like, you know, like, all over the place in a, you know, bad, you know, like, teenager, you know, got out of the bed the wrong side, you know, the bad kind of bad mood there, like, you know, like steam coming out of their nostrils kind of thing, yeah? So, in fact, that's why, you know, Ki'ilu, they were also in pain, so to speak, yeah? Because Asaph had been, anyway, that's an interesting shot, right? Okay, now, next, this is a really fascinating one, number 8, yeah? I don't know whether also people were like, trying to work out this. I was a bit bothered by it. So it says, right, Amalahu Nahi Dizvini Bhurasa Pshuasa Mizvini. That's the Lashon, which means, yeah, that Esav said, yeah, to the children, right, of Yaakov. He said, wait a sec, yeah. How could you be trying to bury Yaakov in this lot? Because it's true, yeah, that I sold the Bechorah, right? I sold that. But the Pshuta, the simple portion, did I sell? I didn't sell that, yeah. So now I just, before we look at the Rashi, the next part is a quote from Rashi, yeah? I just to kind of like speak this out, this concept a bit, yeah? So we know that when you have various brothers, yeah, a number of brothers, right? There's a concept of the Bechorah. The Bechorah means that the first brother, yeah, gets a double portion, yeah? So, let's say you've got two brothers, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got, like, you know, Yaakov and you've got Esav, yeah? So that means, right, that if you kind of split it up, right, yeah, into kind of, you know, have an extra portion. So let's say you don't split it up into twos, you split it up into kind of, you know, threes, yeah?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So two portions goes to the Bechor, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then the rest gets divided, like one portion each. Yeah, that's what the Bechorah means. So here what Esav is saying is, he's saying, listen, I sold the Bechorah the right to get that kind of double portion, yeah? But I didn't sell everything that I had, yeah? I got downgraded, in a sense, just to having like a, you know, being a, you know, a single portion, right? So, okay.
So Yaakov Avinu should have still got more, they say.
Ah, right. So it should end up being, right, that Yaakov Avinu, according to this, yeah? Right, so Yaakov Avinu bought the Bechorah, right? So Yaakov Avinu, therefore, he's accepting, should get the double portion. He's just saying he got downgraded to getting a single portion. Okay, now with that in mind, so now how many things are there? There are two burial spots,
right?
And his taina was, listen, Yaakov, you took your what you're entitled to, right? You took Leah's one, right? So the other one is for me, right? So it says Rashi, right? Mm. Rashi says, V'lo etol pishnayim ela kamohu. Right, so he translates Esav's taina, which is kind of, we'll understand where it's coming from. Yeah, He's saying, wait a sec, you shouldn't be taking double, right? Rather, we should be taking equally, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a problem. What I'm saying is, if he sold the Bechora, then really the answer should have been, right, that Yaakov actually gets more. It's just he doesn't, Esav is saying, I didn't sell everything, I still get a little bit. So for instance, yeah, basically if you kind of like do the maths, yeah, it should turn out, right, that Esav gets most of kind of the remaining portion, but not everything, yeah? And yet, according to Rashi, the way he's saying it is, no, we split it equally, you get Leah, I get this one.
Right.
So, the why is Rashi saying this? Where is it coming from? Yeah? And how do we explain it? That's all the kind of questions about. So the Maharsha says here, this is the first source, Nira, right, Shadikdeik Lefarish Kane. Rashi wanted to explain that really Esav's Taina was, you know, not what we would have thought, which is you got the Mechora, so you get more, but you don't get everything. But rather, Rashi says, no, we're equal, we're splits, yeah? Right? Why does Rashi say that? So Rashi needs to say that, Delo Machar Esav Liakov is a Bechora, that he didn't actually kind of fully give him the Bechora rights, yeah? Ella Shelo Yitol Pishnayim, right? But rather, all he's trying to kind of, it seems to come out from Rashi, that what's happening is, he's saying, when he said, I sold the Bechora, it means kind of like somehow, we cancel the Bechora, and we each get equally. Mm-hmm. Not that I gave you the Bechora rights, but rather we kind of cancelled it, yeah? Elish yachlucha b'shava, right? Kishneachim, peshutim. But it's as if there was no Bechora, and we split equally, right? Now, where does he get that from? De'im lokein maka'ama haida paish didi. Because the continuation of the Gemara, this is where Rashi came from. Esav said, what is left over is mine. You took the one from Leah, and this other one is mine. Right. So Rashi was forced to understand, it must mean, yeah, that when it says, yeah, I sold the Bechora but not the Pashut, that can't mean the simple thing that the Cheshbon I've said, which is, if I sell the Bechora, that means you get more than me, but I still get to retain something.
And it also sounds like it was accepted by the brothers as well, the Taina. Because he's not such a trustworthy guy, Esav. Anyway, but they did it with the basic.
Well, they kind of, but they said you also said, sold. They acknowledged it, but they said you also sold.
They didn't disagree on that point.
Yeah, right. They didn't disagree on that point. That's right. So Rashi gets this from simply the continuation of the Gemara, whereby Esav turns around and says, yeah, this is all mine. So how can it be all his if they're two portions? It must mean that it's not the class, what we would have thought is the selling of the double portion. It must mean that it's somehow some kind of cancelling of the double portion. See what I'm saying? So that it's kind of nullifying it, so that as if we're equal now, yeah?
Right.
We're equal brothers, yeah? Mm-hmm. There is no one who's going to get a double portion. That's kind of what comes out from Rashi, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's now, that's where the Maharsha explains where Rashi's getting this from. The question is, how is this working mechanically, right? He had the Bechora, he had the right to a double portion. The Bechora, he sold it. So how do you end up being that actually now we kind of we're not selling it, we're just kind of downgrading and we each getting equal? So Rav Eliashiv addresses this, yeah? So he says the following. So, and you know what? I'm going to say it out. I'm going to read it inside. I'm just going to tell you outside because it's slightly complicated, yeah? But the basic yesod is, yeah, and it's an amazing Lomdisha kind of thing if you get excited by Lomdis, yeah? Is that they all ask, yeah? This is like a classic, like, Lomdisha question on the whole Misa. How can you sell something that doesn't exist?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's what we call the Devasha Lo Bebolam, yeah? The right to the firstborn, yeah, is something, you know, it's like a, it's kind of a future kind of thing. So everyone gets involved in this question, yeah? Mm-hmm. So one of the answers is, yeah, that it's true, you can't sell something, right, that doesn't yet exist. True, yeah? But there's a concept called kind of, in English language, like legal language, we'd call it a kind of a waiver. Or a siluk, you say, I'm abandoning rights, yeah, I'm abandoning rights. And it could be that maybe to abandon things, yeah, to say I don't want something, even though it's not yet in the world, I'm kind of giving away something that's even going to come in the future. It's easier to do that than to actually kind of transfer, say, a right, and I'm transferring a right which doesn't yet exist. So once again, I can't go and say, if I've got a double right, I can't say, I'm going to take my double right and give it to you, because it doesn't yet, it's not in the world, it's a future inheritance right. But what I can do is I can sign here and now, I'm going to give up on the concept of inheritance, yeah, a double portion. I'm not going to give it to you, I can't sell it to you, I can't transfer it, but I can waive my rights, yeah? And says basically Reb Eliashiv, yeah, he says, based on kind of different achronim, says that's what's going on. And that would therefore explain Rashi. What happened was this, when he said, I sold you my birthright, it wasn't literally, I take my double portion and give it to you. It's what I'm trying to say is I abandon right to have a double portion, which means I downgrade myself to becoming a pasha. And you're always a pasha. I can't give you anything extra, but I should have a double portion. I waive my rights to a double portion. I become like a pasha, and you're a pasha, and now we share equally. Basically, that's how it ends up being. That explains the lashon and the Esav saying, now the second one is all mine, and that's which is the deal that Rashi came from, and that now explains what Rashi says, right? Which is that he's saying you should be kimoni. Very kind of Lomdisha thing. Okay, that's number eight. And last one, number nine, and I found this fascinating, This is like a real, like, Musa message, That's actually, it's also in other places, but this is kind of one of the Makors from the Agadus Maharal, So here, right, this is talking about Chush and Ben Dan, So basically, the way the story goes, just to remind ourselves, is, you know, Esav had this whole dispute, about the inheritance rights, And he said, oh, wait a sec, I'm entitled to this. And the brothers say, no, you also sold that, but, you know, we didn't bring the document with. So they send Naphtali off, to go and get the document from Eretz Yisrael, And in the meantime, they're waiting around, And Chushim, the son of Dan, he's deaf, right? So the Gemara says, Chushim ben Dan, Taman Hava, he was there, but Yakran Lebe Udna, he couldn't hear, so he had no clue, he didn't hear the conversation, and no clue what's going on. All he knows is we're waiting around, and we've got Yaakov Avinu, in his, I don't know, Aaron, or whatever it is, He's here, his dead body here, and we're waiting, and there's a whole kind of, hold up, And what's going on, And basically, as we know, he asks what's going on, and they explain to him, And he gets very angry, and he goes and takes a stick and knocks off Esav's head, So that's the story, right? And then the rest of it totally clear. Now the major question that I want to ask is, why was it that Chushin was the only one to respond in that way? At the end of the day, he got told what happened. So kind of once he got told what happened, he was in the same place as all the other brothers. They explained to him, because he couldn't hear himself, So he explained to him what happened. So in that case, he reacted, he was the one to react, but he had the same information as everyone else. So why is it, the fact that somehow it's something to do with him being deaf, it sounds like the story, but why was it he was the only one to react that way? So this is where the Balei Musa kind of step in, and this is why I kind of find it very inspirational, but it really comes from the Agadus of the Maharal. So let's have a look at this, So this is number nine. He says, Umashilo asa achas min hashvatim ha'acherim, The fact that one of the other tribes, the other brothers, didn't do it, Zeu mipnei, that's because, the way that things unfold, at the beginning of the Maisa, they kind of start talking to Esav and engaging in the conversation. Never occurred to them at that stage they would come on to violence against Esav. They're just in the process of talking with Esav, engaging with him, And at that stage, while you're going through, you never kind of contemplate, this is kind of outrageous, and and you never rile yourself up, And therefore, Kasher hitchel Esav lachlok, lo hayu nimsa etzlam hayis orus. When Esav began to kind of dispute, they never had that kind of his orus, that kind of drive, Shein kach his orus nimsa b'tchila, because really you don't have that strong drive. Rak kasher adavar hu b'koach chidush, lo ma'od. It's only when something is really clear and a chidush that you have an extreme kind of hisorus, like an extreme drive, Kasher noda. For us who is hisorah b'koach lasos. So what he's trying to say is, that in a sense, and this is the classic Musa board, that once you kind of get talking with the Yetzirah and you get engaged with the Yetzirah, right? Esav is symbolic of the Yetzirah, You can come to a very, very far place, And kind of you've been numbed, because you're negotiating with Esav, And you get into a situation of where you never really, you never know how you ended up in that situation, but you're there. And, you don't have that kind of a hisorus to kind of fight against it so much, because you've slowly been kind of chipped away in the negotiation process. Chushim, however, it suddenly came to him. He was like, what on earth is happening? He looked around, Our grandfather's lying here with Bezion, We're not being let in to bury him. What's happening? And all of a sudden he's told, this Esav is coming and holding things up. And he had this immediate, because he wasn't engaging his own. It didn't kind of, it end up like dragging out. Everything came together at once, and he came up with this huge response in response of, this is completely wrong. Esav, this is a rusher, yeah? He's coming and he's a bazaar to my grandfather. He took out his stick, knocked off Esav's head, yeah? So sometimes the Musa lesson we learn from this is, yeah, that you have to be careful not to engage little bits in the Yetzer Hara and discussions. Sometimes you need to take a step back, take out your club, and knock the Yetzer Hara over the head.
Oh, yeah!
And then you get the mission and the burial.
Yeah, there you go. Go, yeah. Beautiful. Oh, I agree.